You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank podcast. I'm here with Mr. James.
Hello.
James, I'm curious because your middle initials an X. What is it?
Yeah, I'll give you a take a guess.
Xander.
No, take another one. You, two out, you get three tries.
Xavier. I'm going Xavier. Yep. It is?
You got it.
Oh, yeah. I'm a genius. Look at that. Yeah, wait. Are you named after the X-Men guy?
No, he's named after me.
Oh, I love the way you use those words. Well, James, I usually ask people, what do they do? But I'm going to ask, what defines you? Because I think that's a way better question.
Ooh, okay.
It hits deep, doesn't it? That's like a freaking Titanic question. Like when you see Leonardo DiCaprio sink into the water when Ruth or whatever her name is on that door. Is it Ruby? What's her name?
Rose.
Rose. Oh, I knew Rose. It started with an R.
Yeah, my sister, I remember that because I got two gerbils when I was a kid and my sister named one of them Rose.
What was the other one?
Whiskers.
Who named Whiskers? You?
No, that was me, yeah.
That's a good name, though.
Yeah, well, the huge whiskers on this gerbil. So
I feel like we're going to keep going back to the name thing, so I just have to address. If you name something, depending on an animal, I hate people that name their animal like something so basic. Like, this is Steve. It's like, Steve's not a bad name for a person, but you got a dog, man. Name him something. My buddy had a dog named Diesel, and he was a Newfoundland, and he was 185 at 1.5 years old. So I'm like, that's a dog name. That's a big dog. So you name it something manly after gas.
I had a coworker who kept saying when he gets a dog, he's going to name it Stain.
Wait, why?
I mean, how do you call your dog?
Okay, this is funny because my housekeeper, when I used to work at a hotel, her name's Dawn. She's mm-hmm. a professional women's champion arm wrestler, which was fucking nuts to me. But she has a cat named Stains, and you would hear her calling out into the neighborhood, "Come here, Stains! Come, Stains! Come, Stains!" And like, it was the funniest thing. Oh my god.
Exactly.
All right. So you said anthropology.
There's a lot of power in names, man. Anthropology, it's sociology and everything. But going back to the names theme, when you choose a name, you choose more than a name. You know, every name means something. And even like my name, James.
Say that to someone that's named Diamond or Precious. No offense to those people out there, but what does that mean? I feel like that inflates your ego if that is true with the names.
True, but do they choose the name or does somebody else choose the name?
That's true.
You know, in most cultures, once you get to a certain point, you choose your own name, you know. So I'm out here in Taiwan, and Taiwan is heavily influenced by Chinese culture, more so than anything else. I mean, it's even called the Republic of China.
It's the home of sushi.
I'm not sure about that, but it's
the a lot of people don't think it, but it's not Japan. It's actually Taiwan. Really? Is the home of the sushi roll.
Okay, I did not know that, but for 50 years Taiwan was under Japanese rule, so I am not a foodie. Half of anthropology is about food. So I'm going to talk in hashtags now. I'm not a hashtag foodie.
Well, what made you like, all right, so what about anthropology are you super interested in? Because I feel like everybody, no matter what you're studying, if it's physics, if it's chemistry, if it's biology, there's always one thing that really pulls your attention in somewhere. And I'm guessing it has to correlate with the fact that you're in Taiwan.
Yeah, so I mean, my area specifically is heritage preservation, and I've been going through the cemeteries with a group of academics trying to collect all of this information off of the tombstones. Taiwan keeps developing their cemeteries, and you know, it's got a history going back about 400 years, give or take, to the early 1600s. And Taiwan keeps trying to say, oh, well, we're special. And then they destroy the things that are 400 years old, you know, and so what I've been doing, I've been working with a group. There's a small initiative by a professor named Dr. Streiter, Oliver Streiter. He's got this Takbong database where he's going around Taiwan. He's been doing this for about 20 years now, just taking photos of every single tombstone. Because they're all being destroyed. So I got involved in anthropology in a really weird way. I came here to do my master's. I wanted to study economics in Asia because I figured that's where everything's going. And then for some reason, I got really curious about one tombstone that was on my university campus, or not tombstone, but a big massive grave. It's like a three-tiered layer cake looking thing, but it's kind of hidden in the side of a hill, kind of built into the side. And so I took an elective course on Taiwan society and culture. And I said, okay, for my project, I'm going to figure out what's going on with this stone or with this tomb. And the professor who I was taking the course from, he's affiliated with Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, but he's in Taiwan, lives in Taiwan half of the year. He said, oh, you need to meet Dr. Streiter. I should also mention this professor's name is David Blundell. Since I'm throwing out names, I want to give some shout outs. But so one thing led to another. Dr. Streiter took me on this trip to these islands in between Taiwan and China, called Penghu, and it's just this fantastic, like, cultural Galapagos Islands. And one thing led to another, and I realized, damn, these tombstones are cool. They encode so much more information on their tombs than we do in the West, that I got kind of addicted to it. You know, I love treasure hunts, I love exploring, I love learning.
You must love Halloween.
Oh, Halloween's awesome, man. So like, my thing is tombstones, death. Like, you don't, there's so many ways to learn a culture, but one of them is, how do they treat their dead?
Yeah. See, that's what's always fascinated me about ancient Egypt, is the fact of like if you were going to ask me, as much as I think we should be exploring the ocean right now, trying to figure out what the hell is down in there rather than focusing on space, if somebody gave me the option of trying to find out any information from something in our history or something that needs to be discovered or left still undiscovered, I would love to go to Egypt and try and not figure out who built the pyramids, but the theory on death. Their theory on death has completely revolutionized the way I think I want to die, which is the aspect of God, I've been doing this a lot recently, and I hate to do this, but I've been tossing out theories. So I'm like, my theory is that, imagine if it's like the Egyptians think, and your body was a ticket to the afterlife. It was this passage that you would do. That's why they would wrap you to preserve your body, and they would fill you with treasures that you could take into the afterlife. They put coin on your eyes for the ferryman to go across and all this. Now, right. Imagine the people that are cremated, and this is the reason I never want to be cremated, because if your body is the passage into the afterlife, like, oh my God, like, I'm free as long as my body stays preserved. You're a fucking pile of ash because you got cremated. That's what it says. My whole thing is, bronze me and put me on the front of a ship. I don't care. But when it comes to like the perception of the afterlife, it's this thing that you want to believe in, but it really never seems like you don't. A lot of people don't, like, if they're not religious, don't really get religious until the very ending, when it's their final minute, when they just want the hope that there is something else out there, to think that this life is going to be the end all be all, and this is the last moment that you're ever going to have thought or reconnaissance of anything. So when I look at the afterlife, I try and think, every religion, everything hits on the same basis. Like, we're all got the same piece to a giant puzzle, but we're all trying to make this thing say, this is the full puzzle. It's like, maybe it's a lot deeper than that. Maybe there's a bits and pieces of everything. We're all hitting around the same basis and it all links together into one giant conglomerate. And I'm like, just the fascination, like if you want to talk about like tombstones, for instance, the weird thing is like the people that hold so much into materialism want the biggest tombstone. For instance, me, when I die, I would love one of those fancy ass tombstones, like a giant statue or pillar where it's like me holding a book and I'm like the thinker, like, what's up? Like, that would be awesome because that really attracts. If you notice, when you go to a cemetery, your eyes are first attracted to all the biggest giant objects. And in the mindset of the mentality of what it was back in the day is the more or the bigger the object or tombstone was means like the more important they were, how much they meant or how much your family meant to do that for you. It's the same thing. If, and I'm going to relate that knowledge to a video game. So this is where shit's going to get really ridiculous.
All right.
RuneScape. So RuneScape, if you died in the game, they would give a little option on your screen that would say to pay for your tombstone. You could be the poor ass dude that pays 0 coins to get a fucking post in the ground with your name on it. Or you could go up and the price keeps going up to like 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 gold, where it's a giant pillar and symbol that'll stand for everyone else to see that this is, here lies this person. It's the same mentality as it was back in the day. They thought that the more money you tossed at it, the bigger the tombstone, the more important you were, and also it would attract the attention to be like, that guy was loved by his family. That's what funeral homes would do. They would say, well, don't you love your uncle? Your uncle died. You were close to him, right? So why wouldn't you want an amazing tombstone? It really brings in the perspective of the movie The Big Lebowski when they put his ashes in a fucking coffee can. Like $10,000 for an urn and he doesn't even care. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's crazy to see how our perspectives and where that even stems from. Like all that interest came to my head from those things I'd experienced that might be considered dumb examples, but they got me to the conclusion of like, wait a minute, we're really holding worth in something. And it's a really weird thing. Tombstones. It's nice to know where somebody is buried, but the matter of love doesn't correlate to the matter of how much you spend into their tombstone.
Yeah. You know, tombstones, the one thing that we always think is, oh, what do I want on my tombstone? But I think 99% of the time, you never get a chance to design your tombstone. It's always someone else designing it for you. And it reflects, you know, the cultural values. It's sure, people will say, oh, well, here lies Rob, or here lies James, you know, blah, 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 blah. But then when you get down to it, you know, why do you even say here lies Rob or here lies James, you know, because most people are going to, you know, not really care who you are. So it's an act of communication, you know. If you ever walk through a cemetery, like on Memorial Day, my family in back home in Maine, we go to all the family burial sites and we just kind of make it look nice, plant flowers. But when you walk through one of these cemeteries, you see all these names and they mean, you know, to you nothing, but to somebody else, they at one point meant something. And, you know, stone is this really fantastic medium that it lasts forever, you know, unless it's deliberately destroyed. This is a record that it's at the grassroots of every society. And so why do you put a name on, in the West, we put like the person's name who's buried. But in Taiwan, this is a Chinese cultural thing. They'll put the family name. And like if it's your dad and your dad's name is Lee, you know, they'll call him Lord Lee. When you die, you become a lord. You become like you're an ancestor. You're not a god, but you're not a ghost. You're an ancestor.
Yeah, because the culture and believes like, heavily in ancestries. You know, right. Speak to the spirits and stuff too.
Right. But then that's really all they say. Here lies Lord Lee. This is his tomb. And then all the other information, like they've got this main column, but then they've got these side columns that just say this stone was erected by his three sons and they give the sons' names, and then by his two grandsons and they give the grandsons' names. And like you realize that even though it serves the same function, you know, burial and a tombstone to make a marker, is it really a marker for the dead person or is it a marker for the family, you know? And so that's been part of my argument to doing my heritage research in Taiwan, is that, you know, this is your grassroots history. Taiwan has never really been allowed to explore its own identity until really the 1990s when it democratized. During the Qing Dynasty, up until 1895 in Taiwan, Taiwan was like a frontier land. It was really chaotic, and people could express themselves on their tombstones. But then when the Japanese came, the Japanese took it over between 1895 and 1945. The Japanese came and they engaged in this process of turning anything that was Chinese into something that was Japanese. And so then after 50 years, Taiwan had this expression of Japanese heritage. And then 1945, Japan loses World War II. Taiwan is retroceded back to the Republic of China, who were victorious. They were one of the five allies who established the United Nations as permanent members, I should say. And then the Republic of China gets Taiwan, and they had just spent, you know, since the early 1930s fighting against the Japanese in Manchuria, then throughout China. They're angry, they're pissed off at Japan. So then they go and they embark on this destruction of anything Japanese. If your family has taken a Japanese name, you're under risk of being arrested. They declared military law in 1949 through 1987, 38 years of martial law, where if you say the wrong thing, or if you try to say, oh, you know, my family is from this place in Taiwan, if the wrong person hears that, you might get a police escort knocking on your door at maybe 2 a.m. and you're never seen again, because they were so sensitive over, you know, local heritage and local ideas of who local people are. So during martial law, you had to say somehow that you were connected back to China. And then in 1987, martial law was lifted. Opposition parties were able to arise. So there's the KMT, the Kuomintang, who were the nationalists who had, they had been in China, then there was the Chinese Civil War, they retreated to Taiwan, and then that's why they declared martial law here. And then you have the DPP, the Democratic Progressive Party. And these two, the KMT is pro-China unification, the DPP is pro-Taiwan independence, but they're kind of now like in the middle ground, like, okay, status quo. But so over this entire history, the one place where people were able to kind of get around the censorship was in the cemeteries. They were able, because nobody's looking in the cemeteries, they're spooky, they're ghostly. So people were able to carve on their tombstones how they really felt, and they were expressing themselves. And now that Taiwan has democratized, they liberalized in 87, democratized in 96. Mm-hmm. And now there's really just been this period of about 30 something years, or not even 30 years, where they're finally able to openly express, hey, we're Taiwan, you know, we're from this island. My grandfather was born here. My father was born here. I was born here. You know, and people have a legitimate ability to say that they are from Taiwan.
It's weird China to see that shift, though, because if you look at what's going on over there, that's now being changed. We're seeing the reverse in America. People are being afraid of their heritage, with the fact of what it can lead to. It means like, oh, if you came from this, that means your ancestors could have been slave owners, your ancestors could have been this, your ancestors could have been that. It's a lot of assuming and stuff where people are afraid to know what they're. I know the genealogy program is really hurting. I've been trying to get a few genealogists on this podcast to find out family heritage and why they got interest in it. They're all afraid to come on because everything's an attack right now. People are finding out like, oh my God, you're telling me this, I was related to George Washington after he did all those things. And you're like, I'm just giving you the information that's there. I'm not fucking writing in stone that you were born under whatever. But that's the weirdest shift, though, because like you should embrace the fact of your heritage and see if there is something dark in your past, look at it and see how you've evolved from that. The thing is, we want to know where we came from, but then sometimes it's not going to be the best answer. My buddy was I hate to call him my buddy. He was a close friend when I was a kid. Was related to Robert E. Lee. If he goes out saying that now, he's going to get shit, a lot of it. But back in the day, when before this was all like hate news and everything, it was an amazing thing. He had his cup, he had his little pipe and everything. He was talking about like, I'm related to the great Robert E. Lee. I'm like, that's fucking cool, man. We learned about him in history class the other day in elementary school. You can't do that now. And I'm like, that's to see that shift. It's really weird. It seems like everything that happens over there happens over here later.
It happens everywhere, but I mean, Asia has had this very, East Asia is very Confucian. So everybody kind of toes the line. You mind yourself. It's all about harmony. You know, if you're outside walking and a car cuts you off, you know, in America, you're going to be really angry at the driver. In Taiwan, you just have to kind of recognize, well, nobody died. Harmony still exists. If I get upset, then I'm going to lose face. And the driver who nearly killed me becomes, you know, he's all right. He gains face because I'm raving in the streets. So political censorship in Asia is just something that's from a completely different dynamic than what we think in America. You know, what is politically correct in the West comes from an understanding, I think, of right and wrong, you know, addressing what has been, you know, what kind of systemic violence was done in the past, and how can you move forward? You know, you have to address it and then you move forward. In Asia, the political correctness is a much more authoritarian style of political correctness. And I think, you know, with illiberal democracies sprouting up all over the place, I think we're going to see a different type of political correctness. I remember being a kid, you know, political correctness was just about using more or less neutral terms. You didn't have a waiter or a waitress, you had a server. But I think now we're seeing a political correctness narrative in the West that's It's frightening. You know, I'm in Taiwan and I have to say, I look back home and I just think, man, it's not looking good.
But the best thing about moving out there, probably it'd be a huge culture shock for you if you came back. I just think it's the factor of the limelight. We're so highlighted right now that we're trying our best to be like, hey guys, remember when China was doing this? Remember when they were doing this? And then we were all talking about this. Let's go back to that. But then once the light starts coming off of us, we immediately want it back. Like, oh, wait, I love the attention. I love this. But I'm like, it's not good attention. Where everyone's wondering what the fuck is happening over here. And it's like, it brings down to a point of, I think a lot of our culture has been shifted. I think there's many influences now, the fact of with even our immigration policy. I'm not saying I'm pro-immigration. If you come over here and you want a better life, go ahead. A lot of my friends are from different cultures and stuff, but it's that shift in diversity that we boast about, is that it's really throwing a shift in our country, because now we don't know how to interact because people are coming from different cultures. People are coming from different heritages where it might be offensive in one thing. It might be passive in another. And it's this whole thing of like, and with social media too, that miscommunication that comes with social media through a text rather than having a face-to-face interaction is going to throw the whole shift off of where we're never going to be able to sense the vibe or have a really flowing conversation with people, with the fact of how isolated we've become. And we have so many more people that are moving over here every single day. We're jam-packed like cans of tuna. And it's like, you look at that, we need to start learning from each other. I'm so fucking jealous. Like, little background on me. Both my parents worked two jobs. So constantly at home by myself, you know, as a kid, you know, just playing video games, doing all this type of stuff. I am so jealous when I come across like my buddy who's Hispanic and his family are all sitting together. And he's like, man, you get your own room. I'm like, I do. But you should be so fucking happy to be having family dinners. There's this shift where it's like, we got to pick up some of the positive stuff. It shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't have to have 10 people in one room, but I shouldn't be eating dinner by myself. There's things that we need to be picking up from each other, that we should all be at this level playing field where we all have our space. But at the same time, there's that family aspect of things too. And it's, that's what always fascinated me about me traveling to other places, not only their thoughts on family and culture and heritage and traditional styles of stuff too, but also the respect that a lot of things come to. Cause a lot of people, when nowadays, when somebody dies, it's just like, okay, here's a lot of money to make a gravestone and then move on. And it's like, hang on a second. Learn about them, figure out the history. Like my great grandfather, I found out he did NASCAR before it was NASCAR, when it was on a dirt track. I was like,
so he was a bootlegger?
I'm not running moonshine, I hope not, but he did like that. You know, he won competitions and stuff on the dirt tracks and stuff. And I was like, why did I find out about this when he, after he died? Why wasn't he bringing this up? Because he didn't like to brag. And I was like, what? Like, this is history you tell a kid and they're like, oh my God, like, this is crazy that like this guy that couldn't even really hear me talk, where I'm screaming at him through the phone, happy birthday, grandpa. What? It's like, oh God, just somebody figure out, teach him how to text or email or something. But it's that type of thing, is you don't want to lose where you come from. You don't want to lose your roots. And I think that's one of the most important things. And even no matter how dark it is what's keeping people from finding out what that is. And the fact that somebody could have something on their gravestone where another person would look at that and then take it down because of the fact it might be a political view is so minuscule mindset in the grand scheme of things. But then we had a church in my town, and I'll tell you the best gravestone I've ever seen. Dude's name was Indiana Jones.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like that's a badass name. You want to talk about badass names? That's a name.
But what, I saw that gravestone. What year was that from? Do you know?
My town's pretty old. I think it was like 19 something, like the early 1900s. Like this town is known for this historical thing, and they don't even use that church anymore.
Indiana Jones.
And I saw that. I was like, holy crap. Cause my buddy was like, I bet you there's a tombstone in there that says Indiana Jones on it. And it's like right up front. I'm like, there's no fucking, you're joking with me. Indiana Jones. I'm thinking movie, and I'm like 14 years old. I'm thinking Indiana Jones movie. And I'm like, wait a minute, that guy's not dead. That's Harrison Ford. What are you talking about? And they're like, no, watch. And we go over and it's literally Indiana Jones on the tombstone. I'm like, that's badass. But you see that, and like they had a big problem with wanting to destroy that church and make a new one and just destroy the graves and relevel them. And then I was like, move it to a different location. And I'm like, you can't do that because you can't just dig up the bodies. You can't just move the bodies. You're just going to destroy the gravestones or move the gravestones somewhere else. The bodies are still in that part. You're not moving those. So then it wouldn't be like you're praying at a gravestone knowing that nothing's below you, not your family members, not all these types of things. It's a big thing where they ended up just building another church down the road and keeping that old one there as like a historic site. I look at that. I'm like, in your opinion, what do you think? Do you care about how big of a mark you leave? Because I feel like with going on in the world right now, everyone is so, I mean, even me, I'd rather touch a few lives than try and get millions to remember me for a second. I'd rather leave a mark on a few people. And I feel like with a gravestone, even when it comes to that, I would like a mark. I would like something nice when I die or something. But I think it's a factor of, it's so hard to think that you're just gone and that your whole life impacted 80, 90, whatever years you live up to, that dramatic impact might touch the souls of your family and your friends, but doesn't make a scratch on the surface of the world. It's so hard for our brains to even try and think about that, where it's like, damn, I want to get fame. I need to be famous so people will remember me. But I'm like, they don't remember you forever unless you did something severely bad. Or you did something severely good, you'll be remembered. But we're going to forget about Matthew McConaughey at one point.
Yeah. I mean, so you bring up a good point, but the perspective, you know, the perspective that we go through our entire lives from birth till death, it's only our perspective. So everything that we see, everything that we know, everything that we learn, it's all egocentric. You know, it's all filtered through this your own personal ego. So one of the challenges is to learn how to let that go. You know, It's important to, you know, it sounds cliche, but, you know, you want to leave the world a better place than you were born into it. Sometimes that just means making having a positive influence on one other person, you know. Sometimes you can do a whole lot, but I mean, you're right. How many movie stars from the 1930s, like their names, how many of them do you know? I mean, I can list off a couple, but I don't know if they're from the 30s. They might be from the 40s.
Is Chapman one of them?
I think Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, Chaplin. Chaplin. I mean, I can't even say his name. That's how you know the question was good.
Yeah, Charlie Chaplin was 30s into the 40s, but I don't know how much of his work outside of that, you know, his classic well-known stuff.
I think it just leads into the fact, like, you got to be doing something like severely impactful to the world to actually still be remembered today. Like, actors might seem they have a giant impact in our lives right now, but nobody really talks a whole lot about Jack Nicholson anymore. You know, it's like the whole Brendan Fraser thing. He was big with The Mummy, which I bet you fucking love The Mummy.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Not really historically accurate, but
no, not at all. But you didn't care because you're watching Brendan Fraser. But then he got diagnosed with like a health thing, and then nobody talks about him anymore. He lost his hair, got a dad bod, and all these types of things. But nobody even brings him up anymore. Same thing with Jack Nicholson. But the things that we do bring up are things that are really, really sketchy. That is a big issue, which is like Marilyn Monroe. Did they kill her? Bruce Lee, amazing impact where they make statues about him. Well, did they kill his son? I mean, his son was shot. So that was from a film.
I honestly, I think you know more about celebrities than I do.
Well, I would just know because my brother's a big Bruce Lee guy. So growing up, it was all Bruce Lee films and shit. I'm like, you don't even know this. Apparently, there's the movie The Crow or whatever it was. The guy thought it would be cool to use like a prop gun or a gun or something, and they would just put like nothing in it. Well, he had like a chamber round or a prop round or something in it, and it fired. And during this giant shootout scene, you can see it. He actually gets hit with a bullet, and it's like a piece of a fragmented bullet. It's Bruce Lee's kid. And he died in the hospital later that day.
I had no idea about that.
But even if you look at like Bruce Lee, he went into, they say it's, what was it? Cardiac arrest was the first doctor's report or something. He had like something. Well, if you look at the actual autopsy of his body, he looks like the shit was beat out of him. Like, black eye, all this, like his face was like somebody took their fist and just started whopping him in the face and shit. And as I was listening to a podcast, the dude was talking about it, and he goes, the weirdest thing is they think it's the triads, because I think it was a couple of days before, one of the main triad leaders' girlfriend was seen with Bruce Lee, and they entered their home together. And they think that Bruce Lee was hooking up with the triad's main leader's girl. So that's why they beat the crap out of him. And the doctor who did the autopsy, the original autopsy, died like a month later, like was hit by a fucking train or something like stupid, ridiculous like that, where it's like, hang on a second. How do you slip off the metro and just land in front of a giant train? Like you got to be pushed into that one. But even in the court case, if you watch the court case, it's the weirdest thing, because his sister or whatever, Bruce Lee's sister, just like, there's a lot of evidence that says Bruce Lee was murdered. Are you sure you want to settle right now? Are you sure you want to settle and not find out if he was murdered by these people? You could send these people to jail. No, I'm good. I'll just take the money. I'm good. Like, she was like, they paid her off. Like, you could see in her face. Like, she's like, nope, I'm good. I'm going to take this. And they end up doing another autopsy report, finding out, like, you get to see the pictures of him. It's like, dude, this dude was wrecked. And then they think he killed his son too, just as a spite thing. Cause that's a big thing with Asian culture as well, is to end the bloodline. You know, that's it's the whole family thing. So I was like, what? That's shit that lasts. That's shit that'll always be talked about, never be forgotten. It's because we don't have a conclusion on it. Same reason JFK. Nobody has a conclusion on it. So it's going to keep on going. That's the only way you get remembered, is when the full facts or the full information doesn't come out. It doesn't really matter upon the gravestone. I don't know. That's just my thoughts on a few things. I went off ranting there.
Yeah, no. Like, so you're telling me things that I never really knew. I knew that Bruce Lee died young, relatively healthy, but it was kind of, he had gotten done. No, you know what? I'm getting everything confused from when I was in high school. I was a high school idiot and had no idea, because I had heard it, like, he had died after he had shot a scene. And then I learned something else later. So when I was a kid, like, the high school rumors.
That was Bruce Lee, I think, because I got that confused too. I think that was his son that got shot.
Yeah.
I think that he had a brain aneurysm. And that's what I think it wasn't a cardiac arrest. It was a brain aneurysm, which was the autopsy report. And they said it was because he had back pain or something. He had a spinal issue where he would chew THC or chew pot or whatever it was, because it would help with the anti-inflammatory into his back. People always talked about that. Like, he did psychedelics.
Right.
But then they think that might have caused like a brain aneurysm in his head, like couldn't get blood to from his whatever, the spine issue. And then they end up doing like a second autopsy report, and the shit was beat out of him. Like, it's not very good to look at. I mean, you can Google it if you want, but you start reading
I'll take
that
your word
stuff.
For it.
But like, the doctor died that did the original autopsy. It's like, all right, that shit that's going to be talked about for a while, because we're not getting a full conclusion of things. People want to know the
answer. That's one of those, it's a silence everybody kind of thing. If there's really a conspiracy, that's definitely somebody silencing everybody who knows. But, you know, there are also some instances where just a weird set of circumstances, everything happens to go wrong. They call it like a system failure, you know, or not system failure, but it's like a structural failure where everything has to line up perfectly for like a big disaster to happen. And I wonder how many of these conspiracies, you know, I love a good conspiracy. I know Epstein didn't kill himself.
I'm not even happy with the new ones. I'm not even interested in this.
The one I'm super interested into
is the freaking, I've been listening to, and I've actually been talking about it a lot recently, but Abraham Lincoln. So he went to the giant oil companies asking for a bailout of some money for some financial help during the war times, when we were basically getting silver from people's houses and using them as bullets and stuff, using them as ammunition while we melted it down. The oil company said, okay, but you got to do this. He said, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not, whatever they suggested, he said, I'm not doing it. They wanted like something that he was gonna have to pay off them in like the long run or something. And he started printing his own money, and that's why our paper is green. That's why they call them greenbacks, because Abraham Lincoln had printed our own money. Then like 2 weeks later, he got fucking shot by an actor, and you're telling me there's not some like grand dark thing that was like, hey, I need you to go shoot. He had no affiliation with fucking Abraham Lincoln. That's the weird part.
I never heard that one, but I did hear the one where when they finally, you know, they say that they caught John Wilkes Booth in a like a barn or a warehouse somewhere in, I think, Virginia. And the federal troops, they torched the barn down to try to get him to come out. He didn't come out. So then, you know, the doctor has to do an autopsy, and apparently under pressure said, this is John Wilkes Booth. However, nothing on this body resembles John Wilkes Booth, something like that. Like,
that leads into the whole factor that they paid him to do that shit. They we're going to get you off.
Right. Like, they needed to have like a scapegoat. So they killed the scapegoat. And then like 20 years later, somebody in California says, oh yeah, I'm John Wilkes Booth, that kind of thing.
Let me tell you, not even, I think 2 weeks after that, his John Wilkes Booth brother had saved his son from getting hit by a car.
Yeah.
That sounds really fucking like, oh, what a coincidence. Cars back then moved at like maybe 8 miles an hour. So you literally have to be aiming for somebody. Like, the whole term jaywalker comes from, it's a slang term meaning like you're an idiot, because if you got hit by a car back then, you had to be standing in the middle of the road for like an hour while this car just comes at you. Like, it was nothing that, that's what they would say. It was like, oh, he was a jaywalker. It was offensive. But you like
what's the J stand for? Yeah, that's a
it's supposed
good old,
to be like
old timey
like it's supposed to be like idiot, like dumbass, like that's the whole term of what it meant back then. But I look at that, I'm like, all right, there's some stuff. I'm just entertaining the idea. I don't full on 100% believe it. I always entertain the conspiracy thing because I think it's more fun to believe. It's the same thing with like cryptids and stuff. It's more fun to fucking believe. Yeah. But then people look at like, it's crazy what goes on with China or Korea. They have one television channel and it's all Kim Jong-il riding a horse, or even Unit 731.
Yeah,
the giant thing that you probably know about with Japan that were worse than the Nazis, that people are like, oh my god. I'm like, dude, that happens here too.
Like the live surgeries and experimentations. I mean, Operation Paperclip at the end of World War II, it was basically this whole like, okay, they got smart guys, we need their smart guys. Yes. Yeah, they may have been war criminals, but we need them. Like,
all for research and information, what we will do to forgive somebody's torturous crimes. I have read the journals of the people that were involved in Hiroishi, I think, his journals of Unit 731's actions, where they refer to people as logs. And then I read a diary of a person that had survived their concentration camps that they had. And he talked about that they would have people's heads in jars just sitting around in the camp, or you would see it while you're working and it would force you to work even more because you didn't want to end up like that person. And I'm just like, bro, like, you think that's bad? We've probably done the same shit, but it hasn't came out here because we're better at keeping it locked down. But that's the thing where I mentioned the spotlight. We like the spotlight to be on other people at times, but right now it's on us and we don't know how to react.
We're getting caught with our pants down. I hate to say it, but it might be a good thing. You know, if anything, the past, really since 9/11, the past nearly 20 years have just been, they've been weird.
It's been a fog.
And I think now, you know, we've gotten to a point where we've moved forward too far with just the weirdness, with the, you know, call it accelerationism, but we've jumped out over our skis and now we're paying the price. And I mean, at the end, everybody has to pay the price. You know, you pay the piper, it's weird. When I was younger, my friends and I would joke about like, oh, the end of the empire. And now we're kind of like, oh, this is a very strange time. You know, the West is going through some weird things. But, you know, the entire world is going through like this really weird phase where everybody's connected, but nobody knows how to communicate.
It's because we're using false connectivity, which is through text or through nonverbal communication, which is some of the most important actual interaction.
And the convenience that we demanded 20 years ago is now mandatory. You know, there's absolutely no way to escape this system that has been built up. You know, you could try to go find like a desert island somewhere in the middle of the Pacific and just try to live the rest of your life there and, you know, try to avoid ever having to leave that island. But society will come for you. We're never allowed, and I don't know if this is really maybe this is just brainworms talking right now, but like, man, there's no escape. It's all seems like it's gonna get worse before it gets better, but
I got that realization, I think, when I was dealing with some medical stuff, I'm still kind of dealing with like this year. I had gotten back and went to the doctors like in December, first time in like a long freaking time. Cause we just don't have health insurance. You break that shit, you got to deal with it. So I went to the doctor and he's like, you haven't been here since like 2005. I'm like, yeah. He goes, I need to update your medical record. I'm like, wow, that's the last log you guys had. But then like now, whenever you go to the hospital and they get your information, it gets sent over like, saw you were at the hospital last month. What happened with that situation? It's like, you're my chiropractor. How the fuck did you get that information? It's like, well, it's logged right here. It's like, they're tracking us. And it's like, that's the weirdest thing, is that people are starting to notice how much we are actually under the eye of people. Like, I always say, like, if they care about your information, whatever, it's like they've been, Social Dilemma was a big thing for a lot of people to choke down. Like, I can't believe they're doing this. I'm like, do you think when you're talking to somebody and you get an advertisement on your phone for the thing you're talking about is a fucking coincidence? I'm like, they're doing it because you're allowing them to. You're giving them permission by buying their app, buying their thing. You're giving them permission to do that to you. And I feel like it's going to become a whole world of advertising, which I look at like, and that's got to be kind of crazy, because in Asia, you get to see a lot of the pop. Everything's kind of like technology, 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 which is like, it's, that would be difficult for me to deal with. I still need my open air and stuff. But the weird thing about it is that a lot of that doesn't get brought into the home. A lot of that, and a lot of cultural families, I would say, a lot of it kind of stops at the door, where it's like, we're having mealtime. This is mealtime. We're going to eat. Okay. There's no phones and stuff. You know, I've never seen anything that seems like a sign of disrespect than pulling out like a phone at a dinner table or something. But then once they leave the house, it's immediately on the phone. It's immediately on the device.
I mean, I can't talk for most families in Taiwan, because I eat by myself. I am not a Taiwan family. You know, I just am not. So I can't tell you what those dynamics are. But when I'm outside, you know, I was walking on my campus. Here's an example. There's such an addiction to their phones. They use twice as much data in Taiwan, mobile data, as the next Asian country, which is South Korea. And so in Taiwan, everybody's always plugged in, always connected. To the point where, you know, I was walking on campus, and this guy up ahead of me, we were walking in the same direction. This guy up ahead of me was kept tripping, and I wasn't sure why he kept tripping. You know, he's walking, there's nothing to trip on, but I catch up to him, and he's plugged in, and he's watching a Korean drama on his phone, and like walking from building to building. You know, but if you get into a taxi here, some of the taxi drivers, they've got like an iPad mounted on their dashboard, and they've got TV shows running on it. Or if you get, like you see all of these scooters, Taiwan has a ton of motor scooters. Every scooter has at least one phone on it, and it's mounted, and usually it's GPS, because people are doing like Uber Eats or Food Panda or any of these other delivery things. But sometimes you see them playing Pokemon Go. Sometimes they have two or three mounted.
That's sometimes what scares me, dude.
One person's driving, the other person is behind them pressing all the buttons on the phone.
One day, instead of looking at gravestones to figure out where your ancestries came from, you're going to have to be looking at their Call of Duty rank. Picture that shit. This motherfucker was a 10th prestige, and this is how you know your grandfather. That's what scares me, is because I had heard a study about New York cab drivers, where there's a part of their brain that sees like directions like a GPS does and knows streets and everything, that is so much bigger than a lot of normal people's, like that one part of their brain. And that's just from being so involved with knowing locations, knowing directions, driving through traffic. That one area of their brain is like, You could tell in a study, like, here's a fucking New York cab driver's brain, and here is a normal person. Just that area was just so, I guess, swollen just from being so involved in it. I mean, the stress factors that have to go in there, things tend to be affected by stress a lot. So it wouldn't be weird if there was an abnormal growth, but that study is weird. It's the same thing when I was, when I used to work at a hotel, I would smoke cigarettes as like a social thing. Like, I worked with a lot of people from New York. So it was like, I want to go and talk to you guys, and I don't want to be like, can I borrow a cigarette? So I grabbed a cigarette, and I'm sitting there puffing. They're all from New York going, one cigarette done, another cigarette done. I'm like, how the hell do you guys have okay lungs? And they're like, we're from New York. I'm like, what does that mean? They're like, break dust, bro. I'm like, brake dust. And the people that are in New York, from the amount of cars that are there, the brake dust particles, literally you can tell in a study that they stain their lungs like cigar smoke. Like, not cigar smoke, cigarette smoke. It's like, it's literally like if you smoke like 50 packs a day, even if you're a non-smoker living in New York, your lungs are coated with black tar from just brake dust particles constantly going in your. Maybe that's the benefit of the mask right now. You're not breathing in brake dust. But it's the same thing. A lot of people that have lived in New York most of their lives and they get out of it, they have very hard hearing. And that's just because of the fact of like, they need to put headphones in just to walk around. So you're not listening to, fuck you, like all the car horns going off. And it's like, what is the world coming to, James?
It's late stage capitalism, my man. Like, I got a message on, I think it was Instagram about a week ago that said, now there's cross app connectivity for your
Facebook is hooked on that shit now.
Yeah, and now so like this is a good example of where we're at, where now capital is unable to expand any further because everything is collapsing. It's now circling the wagon and tightening it and pulling everything in, you know, because at first, you know, the way that capital works is it always looks for new markets, looks for new resources, new places to capitalize. But once that runs out, you know, it then pulls everything in order to capitalize on what it has, you know. And so with Facebook, that you've got Facebook, Instagram, and now they're linking the two together, consolidating it and pulling it in. And that's what's happening now. You know, they say if you're not paying for something, then you're the product. And this has been known since like 2006 when Zuckerberg, one of his chats was leaked with one of his friends. And he was like, oh, yeah, these idiots, they're just giving me all their data, and he called them, I think, like fucking morons or something. And it's weird because we are the first generation globally. This is the first time that we don't care about privacy. We care about it, but we freely give it away. And now that we've freely given it away enough, there is no privacy anymore. You know, we're the product. And I think that creates a lot of this weirdness, you know, this like in your head, you know, that there's something that is just wrong with society. So I'm gonna continue down this path if it's okay.
Yeah.
I read a book by Derek Jensen. He's an environmentalist in California, and he wrote Endgame. It's a two.
Is it a movie?
No. It's oh, am I? I'm gonna get this wrong. I think it's Endgame, but it's about the collapse of civilization, where we're at the point where you can't move forward anymore. And he says, like, take an inventory of everything in the room around you. And try to find something that hasn't been moderated by humanity, you know. And what he means is, what exists that's natural? And really, there's nothing, absolutely nothing in this room around me can be found in nature, you know. And so we've already put ourselves into this weird position where, you know, if we evolved over millions of years to be in nature, and then in the past 200, 300 years, we've put ourselves in boxes with artificial light, not waking and sleeping the way that, you know, we're supposed to. But now in the past 20 years, you add social media to the mix, where everything is always on. You can't escape. If you try to escape from being connected, it'll find you. Or you will have a breakdown because you need that connection. It's designed to be addictive. And, you know, like, even if you and I were in the same room right now, you and I would have this ability to say, well, at least our voices are natural. At least I can see you, and you are a natural thing. But right now it's moderated by the internet. You know, my voice is not actually my voice, and your voice is not your voice, because it's moderated. And it's one of these things that we've kind of sleepwalked into this, and now here we are, and we're recognizing that there are problems.
It's but a person you invited into your home, and then you realize you don't actually like them or want them there.
Exactly. But now it's their home. They somehow managed to own the home. And I feel like, you know, to bring this all back to talking about writing information on stone, the good news about all of this digital data that has been collected on all of us is that in theory, it only takes a solar flare, well-aimed solar flare to hit the Earth to take out the entire electrical grid. When that happens, nobody can access your data. It might still be there on, you know, as ones and zeros on a chip in a drive somewhere in a, you know, in the basement of a facility, but nobody can access it if everything has been fried. And that's why I think that, you know, this time in history, everything that we look at, like let's fast forward 1,000 years, 2,000 years, even though this is a period where we have the most access to data, it's all temporary, you know, because it's nothing is in stone anymore. You know, you try to like put out or put together all of this information, it's not even on paper, it's all digital.
Well, look at the example of when Facebook went down this time last year. It was a huge thing. People were like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it was a huge thing on the news. Facebook was down, yeah. Instagram was down, Messenger was down, Twitter was down. People didn't know what to do. I'm like, that's a small test. Like, that's a small test of things. People were upset they couldn't post. People are upset that they couldn't let everyone know that they're doing this at this moment or it doesn't happen. It's a thing, and it's like, oh my God, we're hooked in. We bought the product. We invited it in. That's the hardest thing for me to do was like, be able to like, I remember I broke my phone for 3 days and I realized every morning I was waking up checking for my phone. And it was like, I need, and the reason, so it's actually a funny story. I broke my phone the day before Thanksgiving, right in the morning. I had like, it just shit on me. It wasn't turning on. It wasn't doing anything. I spent all night trying to get the passcode over. And I thought maybe if I leave it charging, I'd wake up and it'd be okay. So I went to store Thanksgiving Eve. They're closing early. Spent all day. And they were like, you're going to have to probably come back in and pick it up. I'm like, okay. They were supposed to call me. They never did. Went the next day on Thanksgiving to go pick up my phone. They're closed. That's 2 days. Every morning I was checking for my fucking phone, wondering, I feel so disconnected. What happens if someone died? All these types of things I can't post. My mind was going crazy. This was a few years ago. And the next day, the day after Thanksgiving, I came in. Where's my phone? I sat there all day while they had to reprogram and transfer all my stuff over to the new phone. I get home. They didn't activate it. So then I had to drive all the way back that same day to go make them activate it. It was this long haul all for my phone. I'm like, I look at it now and I'm like, it put me through so much hell, but I was willing to do anything for it. And I look at it like, I just need to back off of it. And I do that now. I barely am on my phone a lot of the times. If anything, I'm getting a message from somebody asking about like something with the podcast, but that's the only thing that keeps me looped in. That and Dragon City, those consume my time.
I just feel, you know, in the historical record, you move forward a couple thousand years, you're going to look at this period and there's going to be no data because it's all going to have been somehow erased by like a solar flare or a magnetic disruption or something. And all of our knowledge, you know, it's like the Library of Alexandria. There's so much knowledge that was lost. And because it was only kept in a format that was localized and destructible, easily destructible, it was all lost.
That's why in 2017, the Vatican Archives started transferring over all their books of scanning it over and putting it into a file format. They go through what, 2.5 million articles or pages of research or information that gets stored up to that thing each year. But they have so many under there. They said it would take a matter of like 15 years to get it all down. I'm like, can I just get the secret trials of Galileo, please? Like, that's all you guys have in there that I want. I don't care if you have the JFK thing. I can live with that being a myth, but I would like to see the secret trials of Galileo. I feel like it's crazy to see the shift. And what's interesting is, do you think that, you know, instead of studying tombstones, it's a lot more to pull stuff out of our ancestry if we can be able to study a person's data? It seems like with the internet tracking us so much that we might have a better logged information. But then that brings up into an argument of, do you want to know that your great-grandfather was on Pornhub looking up bestiality or something? That would be fucking terrible.
This is one of those things where...
Not Pap-Pap!
Peepaw, no! But like, okay, so I have two thoughts here. One is so much of this stuff is mundane that it's just, it's ones and zeros and nobody's ever going to remember it. You know, it's nodes in a system of data that has absolutely no meaning, no bearing on, you know, it has meaning, but does it? Does it really? You know, I think the genealogy that you would be more interested in is, you know, the physical data, the things, the information that is either written in a book, written in a log somewhere, or just the stories, you know, and oral histories are incredibly interesting things, because they, if you have a family that is able to keep an oral history and an oral tradition going, you know, you realize that you've got a lot of information already and you don't need the Pornhub info. My second thought is, you know, maybe in 50 years from now, who knows how weird porn is going to get? And then pap, pap, porn browsing habits aren't going to matter, because you're going to be like, oh yeah, that's vanilla porn. And that's what's also weird.
Don't do that to me. I gave PapPap the extremist porn I could think of, and you're going to toss out that porn might not be that bad in the future. I'm afraid, because have you seen this stuff now?
But look at how we're going. Everything is so super specialized that it's going to get weirder. Things are going to get worse. They're going to get weirder. And they're going to, I mean, man, who knows? I have no idea. Like, I don't want to live forever. We're in
for a wild ride. That's what it is.
I don't want to live forever, but I'd love to live to be 200 just to see what happens.
I want to die at like 26. I don't give a shit.
Well, I don't want to be old. If I could live to be 200, I'd like to be youthful for 200 years and then bam, dead.
From the words of my great-grandfather, which I'm pretty sure his last year he was trying his hardest to die because he stopped taking all of his medication. He was like, I look like a goblin. I was like, okay. I don't, what do you want me to do with that? But I mean, living to like a nice age, obviously, but yeah, I wouldn't want to be super old where my body like slowly withering away is not a way to live.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, there's, I can't remember where I heard it, but somebody said it's better to be eternally youthful and then die than to live forever and keep aging.
Sounds like something Rob Lowe said.
It could be. I think it's more of a philosophical thing that I read out here in Asia, but it's true. Like, you get old, I think that's why so many, when you get older, you're kind of ready.
It's the only promised thing.
Yeah, well, and taxes.
Fuck yeah, that's true. They take that shit when you die. That shit follows you. That stuff, they pay. They tax your family when you die.
That's why they put all your stuff in the tomb, so they can't audit you.
I'm ending on that. That was great, dude. James, that was perfect, bro. Thank you,
Rob,
so much.
Rob, nice chatting with you.
Dude, please promote your Instagram page. Promote anything you want to promote, dude. That was awesome.
All right. So Instagram is at James X Morris. I have from there I post photos from my field work and just like my little hobbies that I do. I have a Patreon that I'm kind of putting together, but it's still not there. But if you want to check it out, it's patreon.com/JamesXMorris. I keep everything super simple. So it's just almost everything's James X Morris, except for my Pornhub.
You keep that anonymous.
Exactly.
Good man.
So... And then, those are the things I'm doing. A word of advice for anybody who's listening, talk to your elders, record what stories they can say, because once they're gone, those stories might be gone too. Everything exists in a state of change, but you can still, that doesn't mean that you can't learn from it.
You're telling me, dude, my grandmom, who is now suffering from like not remembering who anybody is, she dated one of the servicemen that protected JFK the day he was assassinated. And that guy's still alive. So I need to, I've been trying to get my mom to let me know his name. But my mom's like, I don't want you bothering him with your podcast. I'm like, but don't you understand? He has the answers. But yeah, she doesn't even know what a podcast is, but I've heard some stories where I'm like, can you let me record this shit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you just keep a journal. After you hear the stories, you just write it down, because at some point they're not going to be around to tell the stories again. And then when you're an old man, you can look through all your notes and be like, eh, now get rid of that one. Nobody needs that one. But you never know.
That's why I'm jealous of the Mormon people, and they keep a diary. And it's like every day they log something in. So they have diaries of like their great, 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 great grandfather that's logged in there to know what they were doing on that day and what was happening.
They are probably the world's foremost genealogists. If you can't find information yourself, they will find it. They have it.
Ask a Mormon.
Yeah, seriously. It's incredible. They do that. And they, whenever, my understanding is when you're baptized into the Mormon church, you're also like, they take somebody from these records and they also baptize them through you somehow. And so like, I remember.
Is this like a scene from Superman?
No. It's just like, because they're worried that people who weren't baptized into the Mormon church won't go to heaven, something like that. So I remember.
I don't want to be forcibly shoved into water.
Well, you wouldn't be, just your name would be. You know, so there was a controversy a few years back. I think there was a Holocaust survivor who was baptized into the Mormon church with a Mormon church member was being baptized. So they took the name, slapped it on them, baptized them. And there was a huge uproar because they were Jewish. How dare you baptize them as Mormon? But religion's a weird thing.
I'm not diving into that one on this episode, but yeah, thank I'm you.
My pleasure.
But thank you everybody for listening to this episode Out of the Blank podcast, and stay tuned for our next episode.
Hey, thanks for checking out the podcast. If you want to visit iTunes or Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcast, rate, review, subscribe, and even share the show. Helps me out. Leave me a little something, like a little message about oregano or Domino's pizza or how Papa John's is evil. Thanks for checking out Out of the Blank podcast.